Chapter 13. That feeling had returned to me, the feeling that I was all-powerful and unstoppable. I felt like a king, no, a god with the power to take and give life in my palm. I'd killed so many prisoners with the experiments, and then I'd executed Martin, Delphine, and Hortensia with my bare hands. Even Lucien could be considered part of my body count. After all, he'd been killed because of me. I'd spent most of my life as a sniveling little grub, crawling across the ground underneath the aristocrats' feet, and now I felt above them. None of them knew what I did to their comrades, and yet they still respected me and saw me as a good brute. I was more than that, more than just vermin that would go along with everything they did and said. All of them would learn, and when I took the capital for myself, they would bow down to me.
"When do you think it'll start kicking in?"
Josephine whispered. The soldiers below us on the drive slurped up the soup Daisy made, and a few of them came back for more. They lifted their empty bowls and grinned up at the beautiful brunette with their lips wet with broth remnants. The bear girl nodded to them graciously, dipped her ladle back into the pot, and served them more. "It should already be working. Look over there." I pointed toward one of the first men who'd come up to the porch for a serving, and as he spooned the food into his mouth, his eyes lazily shut, snapped open, and lowered for a second time. His head lolled to the side and rested against his shoulder, but snapped back to attention. "Give it a few more minutes, then all of them will be sleeping soundly. Daisy, go inside and prepare Valerie and Ryan. We're all going out tonight, and I want to make sure everyone is ready to go once the last soldier is asleep."
"Of course, Charles."
The brunette nodded, placed the ladle into the pot, and went inside. Josephine stepped up beside me, pressed her hand into the fabric of her skirt, and held my hand where none of the soldiers would see. The heiress gazed over them with emotionless eyes, and I left her alone with her thoughts for a moment, but it seemed the honey blonde had other ideas.
"Do you ever feel sorry for them?"
Josephine asked. "The soldiers? Well, sort of, but there's nothing they can do. I assume that they were forced to join Edeny's army."
"No, the aristocrats."
I realized that Josephine's eyes weren't aimed down at the soldiers on the drive, but down at the city of Edenheart below. The hand that held mine shook desperately, and I stroked it softly with my thumb. I don't know how to answer that. Maybe. There are a lot of things in this world that they don't understand. Well, take Edeny, for example. She says that she loves me, but she doesn't understand what that word means. She fully believes that she'll live out the rest of her life with me by her side. Not even by her side, but behind her, because we're still unequal. When she refers to the future where she is queen, I'm not king. Every time she refers to it, she says, "queen and her husband." She will never believe in equality, and neither will all of the other aristocrats. That's why we have to change their minds by force. It's been hundreds of years, and men are still treated worse than garbage. Something has to change.
"The aristocrats are miserable. They're power-hungry, greedy, and selfish. While studying the history books my mother collected before she fell ill, I realized something. The aristocrats may not know it, but without men in their society, they will never be happy. Men and women used to be units, wives and husbands, and they used to work together. Life and society flourished when they worked together, but no one wants to talk about that. I tried to bring it up to Adelia and Liliana, but they immediately glared at me and I stopped talking. I feared if I elaborated, they'd paint me as a brute sympathizer and throw me at the Duchess's feet. More than ever, we need men and women together to create balance. The world cannot remain like this, let alone survive without the help of our male brothers."
"Do you think you're happier with a brute in your life? Have I brought balance into your life?" Josephine threw her head back and laughed with a hand pressed to her lower stomach. Her honey-blonde curls shifted around her pink cheeks for a second, and I thought she'd never looked prettier. This was Josephine's first mission with us, and I knew she was afraid, but she still managed to laugh, so it was a good sign.
You've made me happier in the past few days than I have ever been in my life, and I'm so thankful for that. If I hadn't met you by chance that day, I'd probably still be drinking tea with Adelia and Liliana and listening to their disgusting beliefs. You're fighting the good fight, Charles, and I will stand by you until the men worldwide get justice. Too many men have died pointless deaths, and it ends here with all of us.
Are you afraid? Your hand is shaking.
Well, of course I'm afraid. The most violence I've seen is aristocrats disciplining their consorts, and I can barely stomach that. I can only assume that the next few months, even years, all of us will see a lot of violence. But if I'm with you, I think I can stomach it. We're doing this for the right reasons, Charles, and sometimes violence is the only answer. If someone won't listen to reason, you have to make them listen. And I fully believe that's what we have to do in this situation.
I was grateful we'd found Josephine, and it's been an utter surprise that she believed in the same things we did. When we first met her, we all thought she was nothing more than an aristocrat who kindly treated her servants and workers. But we later found out it was more than that. Josephine was essentially a harlot from birth, and her mother taught her the ways of her secret society. I felt sorry that Josephine's mother fell ill with such a horrible, debilitating disease, and I wished I could meet the woman who sparked a secret revolution.
Charles! Look! I think it's finally working!
I turned my eyes away from the gorgeous blonde and watched as all of the soldiers wavered back and forth. A few of them had fallen asleep, one of them laid with his feet halfway out of the tent, and the loud snores exploded out of the canvas fabric. More men laid down with their packed packs, nestled them underneath their heads, and fell straight to sleep. One man slept straight up on a tree stump with his bowl still in his hands and his head resting on his shoulders. "Let's go. We'll take the wagon to South Bend, tie off the horses, and trudge through the forest. I might send Valerie ahead of us as a scout to make sure Kalara is there, and once we're in position, we'll attack." I turned toward the door, but it slowly crept open, and the feline woman peeked out with a single oceanic eye. The ash blonde glanced around the sleeping soldiers, giggled, and then opened the door a bit wider.
"Are we ready to go?"
the cat girl asked.
"We have everything we need, and we've cleaned up the kitchen."
"Yes, I'll go hitch the horses, and we'll be ready to leave. Have everyone meet me outside by the carriage house." Valerie nodded, and then shut the door with a soft click. Josephine and I hurried down the stairs, stepped over a few sleeping bodies, and then headed for the carriage house. Daisy, Ryan, and Valerie appeared out of the kitchen's side door and then waited for me. The black-haired imp woman stepped forward and guided the horses out of their stalls, toward the wagon, and then strapped them into place. Ryan softly stroked their sides and whispered comforting words into their twitching ears as she placed their bits into place.
"Thank you," I murmured when we finished.
"No problem, my love,"
the red-skinned imp smiled.
"Now let's get out of here and catch us a new sister." "Yes, yes, yes!"
Valerie squealed.
"Oh, I've been waiting for this the second that Ryan stepped out of the machine. Oh, this is so exciting. Oh, I wonder what she'll look like. Well, it doesn't matter. She'll be beautiful no matter what. Oh, Josephine! This is the first time you'll get to see the experiment in action. It's so beautiful." "Well, I'm very excited to see it,"
the heiress giggled.
"I've heard so much about it from all of you."
"Let's worry about the experiment later. We have to find Kalara and capture her before Edeni does. I doubt the Duchess had any idea where she might be and is tearing the whole city apart. But as long as she's distracted, we'll be fine. We'll stick to back roads where she has no chance of running into us. Her guards will be out, so I want everyone to be on high alert, and don't hesitate to tell me if you see one."
"Yes, Charles."
My women nodded in unison. Valerie, Ryan, and Josephine clambered into the back of the wagon, while I helped Daisy up into the front seat. I gripped the reins in my hands, smacked them against the horses' backs, and guided them toward the front of the house. Leaving the house proved to be more difficult than I expected, since the drive and the hill were a sea of green canvas tents with unconscious men lying around them. I managed to guide the horses and wagon through the small spaces of the tents, and Valerie jumped out every few minutes and dragged men out of our path. The process was painstakingly long, and I feared that by the time we drove down the hill toward the city, Kalara would be long gone. "Move him there," I pointed down to the feline woman.
"Ugh, thanks science, he's the last one,"
the cat girl grumbled, dropped the sleeping man's arms, and hopped into the back of the wagon.
"Do you think Kalara will still be there?"
Josephine asked.
"It's been a few hours."
"I'm not sure, but we have to try. There's no way she went back to her house, especially if Edeni is out with all of her soldiers. We also don't know what she's doing at this crying tree, or how she'll get into contact with the queen. I said earlier that she might have a messenger sending their conversations back and forth, but I'm not sure if I believe that anymore."
"What do you mean, Charles?"
Daisy asked.
"What else would she be doing there?"
"From the story Josephine told us, the crying tree is a spiritual and haunted place. A lot of black magic rituals require spiritual beings involved. She may be attempting to harness the natural energy left over from the killed lovers to communicate with the queen."
"Wait,"
Ryan cried.
"You can use black magic to speak to people far away? I thought it was just like cursing people and other stuff."
"No," I shook my head. "I don't know much, but the dark arts have many more uses than just cursing people and cheating to get your way." Our wagon rolled down the hill a little faster, and in the distance I made out the street lamps of Edenheart. It was early evening after everything that happened today, and I could make out shapes moving around from street to street. Somewhere down there, Edeni searched for Kalara with all of her soldiers, and though she was determined, I doubted she would find her. I felt like we were on the right trail. I couldn't be sure why I felt this way, but something within me knew we'd find Kalara at the crying tree. Edeni didn't have the same information as us, and I assumed that the Duchess had only heard of the crying tree once or twice in her lifetime. I'd never heard of it before, but everyone else in the city fully believed in the legend. I licked my lips, sighed softly, and gazed over the darkening streets of the city that I called home. Would I even consider it a home? No. And all of the other men who lived here, too, probably wouldn't. Before Edeni hired me, the streets and the forest were home, and the only other place I'd ever felt comfortable was the manor, the place where my monster women came into existence and brought me more joy than I ever thought I would know. Kalara was a threat to that, and we had to snuff her out before the Duchess reached her. Sure, Edeni was a threat to us, too, but even though she was in power, she was easily controllable.
"What is it, Charles?"
Daisy asked.
"You look pained."
"I was just thinking. Having Edeni on our side isn't so bad if you really think about it." I glanced over my shoulder at all of my women, and their faces were all different stages of confusion and disgust. From beside me, Daisy's lip curled up and exposed her teeth. Valerie's blue eyes narrowed on my face, and her fluffy chocolate brown ears laid flat against her head. Josephine's orange cat-like eyes were wide, and her lips parted in a loud gasp. Ryan tilted her head at me, crossed her arms over her chest, and huffed angrily.
"Excuse me?"
Daisy chuckled.
"You're going to have to repeat that again."
"Did you just say what I think you said?"
Valerie gasped. "Yes. You're hearing me right. I don't mind working with the Duchess. I mean, she may have taken away our freedom and threatened to kill me on multiple occasions, but think of all the power she has at her fingertips. We can use that for the betterment of the city."
"You do realize that eventually we're going to have to transform Edeni,"
the bear girl uttered.
"And she will lose all of that power."
"Not entirely. When Edeni's mother fell ill, she still ruled over the city despite being deathly ill. She never went out into public or gave any audiences to other aristocrats, but wrote out her decrees and had appointed officials read them for all to hear."
"So, are you suggesting,"
Josephine murmured,
"we somehow convince Edeni to appoint one of us to be her delegate, transform her, and then evoke changes without the Duchess's approval?"
"Oh, she'll approve them, because she'll be a monster girl and will believe in all the same things that we do."
"But you do realize that there's no way we'll be able to convince Edeni to appoint one of us to that position,"
Ryan interjected.
"You're the only person she trusts, Charles, but you're still a man. You know she would never give you that amount of power." It's a good plan, Charles.
Daisy nodded.
But why didn't you try to convince her earlier when you first brought her down into the laboratory?
Edeny trusts us. Specifically, trusts me as the man who loves her. When I took her down into the laboratory, she just learned that I'd betrayed her, created monster women, and kept them all from her. She was in a state of elation, but she was extremely wary of me and the laboratory. If I'd tried to convince her to sign over all of her estate to me then, she would have said no and killed me where I stood. If I were to do it now, I'm sure she'd be convinced. At this point, I've proven myself to her, and she knows that she has my total allegiance.
So you think it would work if you tried it here and now?
Josephine asked. Maybe after we transform her, I nodded, turned the reins in my hands, and guided the horses off onto a back road. But I'm sure if I tried it now, she would agree under great caution. I'm just saying, hypothetically, if Edeny were to fall ill, who'd know if her words and decrees read to the citizens were hers or not? No one would know, especially if it's signed and dated by the Duchess herself.
So you're saying...
Daisy murmured.
A forgery?
Well, it's not a forgery if the person signing it once was the Duchess. She'll just look a little and act a little different than she did before.
I mean, it could work,
the bear girl breathed.
Kind of like a proxy leader. Everyone would think it's Edeny, but it's really us. Do you think if we tried to make changes, the other aristocrats would listen?
We'd start slowly, small things at first, and then over time, we'd implement more serious rules. But I doubt by this time next year we will be living in Edenheart at all.
What?
The heiress gasped.
What do you mean?
If we take Edeny out and she's under our control, the queen will know and come to take Edenheart. We can't let the city fall into her hands. So we start transforming every aristocrat we can get our hands on. Before long, Edenheart citizens will be entirely made out of monster girls. A whole army, if you will. And they'll be powerful enough to fight. But that's thinking small. There are other duchesses, other rulers that think exactly like Edeny, and...
We're going to transform them?
Daisy asked.
Is that what you mean to say?
Yes. I know I sound like a madman, but we can do it. We can change the world for the better with my machine. And once we've transformed enough aristocrats, we'll converge on the capital and kill the queen.
But what about the machine?
Ryan asked.
Isn't it stationary?
I can make improvements to it. Remove all of the extra panels and components. There's a lot of wasted space inside because all of the inner workings aren't used. Edeny and I designed the machine to transform men into super soldiers with crystals and other elements. But none of those mechanics are used when you create monster women. I could make it lighter, too, and maybe put it on wheels so we can drag it around behind us wherever we go.
I think it's a brilliant idea, Charles.
Josephine smiled.
I am a little sad that eventually we'll leave Edenheart, but we'll be making the world a better place.
We drove on one of the back roads that surrounded the entire back end of Edenheart, and I could barely make out the street lamps between buildings. A few people passed between the houses, but they hardly seemed to notice us. The drive to South Bend wouldn't take long, but we'd have to walk for a few hours to get back to the Crying Tree. We didn't know the exact location, but as we neared South Bend, I felt a strange sensation within guiding me to where I needed to go. South Bend was just outside of town and the only road that led out of Edenheart. If you wanted to go anywhere, you had to go around South Bend, though I doubted anyone would be coming down this road with Edeny tearing the city apart. Once we got close to the location, I slowed the horses to a stop, pulled them off to the side, and tied them off to a tree. I helped all of my women out of the wagon's bed, brushed off my hands, and felt the strange tug in the middle of my chest again. I'd never dabbled in black magic, only alchemy, and while they were very different, I felt an eerie familiarity in the air that I hadn't sensed before. I stepped forward out into the road, turned my head in each direction, and listened. We should have been too far away from the location of the Crying Tree, but I could have sworn I heard a distant voice chanting. I glanced over my shoulder at my women, and none of them seemed to hear it. Could it be Kalara, from this far away? I had no way to be sure, but stepped forward into the woods anyway.
Charles?
Daisy asked.
Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm fine. I have this strange feeling. I don't know how to describe it. It's like I'm being pulled and guided into the forest by some unseen force. Do any of you feel it too? The corners of Ryan's lips pulled down into a grimace, and Valerie squinted her eyes to concentrate. Josephine tilted her head, and Daisy peeked deeper into the darkening woods, but none of them seemed to hear it. Maybe it was my connection to alchemy that allowed me to understand and feel all of these things, but how and why?
No.
The bear girl shook her head.
I can't hear anything.
Well, I can't either,
Valerie murmured. It doesn't matter. Let's go this way. The feeling is pulling me in this direction. I tramped through the bushes, ducked underneath a low-hanging branch, and pushed on deeper into the forest. My women seemed confused by my reaction, but followed after me anyway. Before long, I noticed something strange about this forest, and I wondered if there was more to it than a legendary haunting. Out of the corner of my eye, blue lights flickered, but every time I turned to face them, they'd disappear. The singing was louder now, but it would stop entirely on an odd note every few minutes. My women seemed to notice all of this and stepped closer to crowd around me in a tight formation. I'd heard stories of nymphs and fairies leading travelers deep into forests, but never here in Edenheart. I wondered if this was the work of a mythical creature or something different and darker. Was it something that Kalara did? Was she casting some sort of spell to deter anyone who stepped foot through the forest on this night?
What the hell is that?
Ryan barked and pointed ahead of us. This wasn't just a flickering blue light in the darkness. It was a full-blown figure shrouded in a royal blue aura. I could clearly tell that the figure was a woman, but her face was devoid of all features when she turned toward us. The song and voice weren't coming from her, but the figure turned toward the path of weeds ahead of us and pointed with a single bony finger.
Is that a ghost?
Valerie whimpered, held her tail between two hands, and scuttled behind me.
I didn't know they existed,
Josephine cried and clamped onto my shoulders.
Charles, what do we do?
I think she wants us to follow her, I breathed.
That sounds like a very bad idea, Charles.
The feline woman shivered. No, I shook my head. I don't think she wants to hurt us. I think she wants to lead us to Kalara. The figure floated forward a few feet, turned back, and pointed even more feverishly down the weedy path. Its movements were more urgent this time, as if it were afraid, and I took a tentative step forward. The specter didn't move or acknowledge my presence at all, only floated a bit deeper into the woods. Valerie, I need you to follow after her and find out where Kalara is.
What?
The cat girl cried.
Why? Why me?
One, your invisibility, I explained. You'll be able to sneak up on her without her seeing. Two, you're part cat. You're quieter than the rest of us. Just follow her, find out where Kalara is, and come back to us.
But...
The ash blonde protested and then whispered.
I'm scared.
Valerie, think of it like this,
Daisy soothed.
I read you scary stories every night before bed, don't I? This is like living in a scary story, but the ghost in this one doesn't want to hurt you. It wants to help you.
Yeah, well,
Valerie grumbled.
The ghost stories in those books don't come to life and make you follow after a creepy, faceless woman in the middle of the night.
True,
the brunette nodded.
But if you do this, you'll be a hero. What you're doing is brave. You're leaving the group behind to help us.
It'll only be for a little bit. Once you find Kalara, find out what she's doing and come right back to us. Do you understand? There's no reason to be afraid. She won't hurt you. Look at her. She's harmless. Valerie breathed a heavy sigh, shook out her arms, and then pointed directly into my chest.
I'll only do this because you asked me to. Also, because Daisy said I'm a hero. You better promise to me that we're never doing anything spooky or scary after this.
Well, I had no idea this would happen, but sure. will never go anywhere else scary or spooky if I can help it.
Alrighty then. Let's go, creepy lady. Lead me to wherever you want to take me.
The cat girl lowered herself closer to the ground, stretched out her legs behind her, and then pounced forward silently. The ash blonde moved so lithely, it reminded me of panthers or tigers stalking their unsuspecting prey. She made absolutely no sound as she followed after the floating woman. No crunching leaves or breaking limbs could be heard in the forest.
How long do you think it'll take her to reach Kalara?
Ryan asked.
I wanted to ask that too,
Josephine murmured.
Charles, there's no way that we walked for 2 hours. We've barely been in the forest for maybe 15 minutes.
I thought so, too. There's no way we could be that close to Kalara yet.
Do you think it was the lovers?
The imp woman asked.
This is their forest, where they used to meet in secret. Do you think they somehow transported us deeper into the forest?
Something like a wrinkle in time,
Daisy murmured.
But with the layout of land? I swear we just entered the forest only a few minutes ago.
Maybe the spirits killed here are protecting the forest. They felt safe here and came for refuge. They could know our intentions and our hearts are pure.
Stranger things have happened. I wouldn't be surprised since we just saw a ghost.
If that happened, I wonder how long it'll take Valerie to come back to us.
All four of us stood huddled together for a long time in the falling darkness. I wasn't sure how long we waited, but the minutes seemed to stretch on for hours. The forest was utterly silent, no birds cawing, no creatures moving around in the underbrush, and certainly no Valerie returning to us. I couldn't tell if hours had passed or if it had only been a few minutes, but I held Daisy, Ryan, and Josephine close to me in the strange woods. I wondered if what she said was true, if the forest had somehow folded beneath our feet and allowed us to pass through it more quickly. I glanced over my shoulder toward where we came from, but it gave me no clue as to what happened. A soft, almost warm breeze brushed my face, and for a second it felt like a woman's hand turning my head back to where Valerie disappeared. I listened for any sound in the distance, but deafening silence rang through my ears. I glanced down at Ryan, Josephine, and Daisy, and all of their eyes were trained on the spot where Valerie had disappeared.
How much longer?
Daisy worried.
She must have found her by now.
Be patient. It's all right. I'm sure she found her way and is just watching what Kalara is doing.
I'm worried about her,
Ryan murmured.
Why are you worried?
A familiar voice asked. A loud thump came from behind us, and we turned to see Valerie crouching on the forest floor. The feline woman slowly stood, brushed off her hands, and pressed her closed fists to her hips.
Oh, thanks, science!
Daisy gasped, raced forward, and threw her arms around her sister.
We were scared something happened to you.
Nope!
Valerie shook her head.
The ghost lady led me through the forest, and I found Kalara.
What was she doing? I asked.
Well, I'm not entirely sure. Some sort of ritual? She has a bunch of runes painted on the ground, and she's kneeling in front of it with a bunch of crystals and bowls filled with powders.
What could she be doing? A summoning spell of some sort?
Well, if that's what she's doing, she was talking to someone the whole time. Someone I couldn't see or hear, but I'm sure it was the Queen.